Uncertainty isn't just a challenge, it's a call to adapt. At Tagoras, we help organizations navigate disruption with clarity and confidence. Whether it's making smarter decisions about your portfolio, understanding shifting market dynamics, or identifying new opportunities for growth, we bring deep experience in strategy, market assessment, and lifelong learning. If you're looking to build a more resilient, responsive learning business, we're here to help. Learn more at tagoras.com/clarity.
Sometimes it's helpful to take hairy subjects like marketing and strategy and break them down into simple but not simplistic terms, like today's look at audiences and products, existing and new.
I'm Salisa Steele.
I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast.
If you've tuned in before, odds are you know that we focus on and often talk about the reach, revenue, and impact of learning businesses.
In this episode, we want to focus on the core ways in which a learning business can grow its reach, revenue, and impact. In the simplest terms, that comes down to new and existing audiences and products.
That's right. They're basically those two factors to consider, audiences and products. So in other words, those you sell to and what you sell to them. And using those two factors, you can set up a 2x2 matrix, a favorite tool of consultants like ourselves, and you can use that to outline the four approaches to growing reach, revenue, and impact for your learning business.
That's right. So you can grow by reaching new audiences with new products. And if you're a brand new learning business, that's your option. But we're assuming that you're probably not new, that most of our listeners are probably folks already working in a learning business. But even if you are in an existing learning business, this is still an option. You could decide to develop a new product and promote it to a new audience. And that might be the case if you've maybe traditionally had a domestic base, but now you want to tap an international audience and you need a new offering to appeal to that international audience.
So that would be one quadrant of our 2x2 matrix. If you're inclined to think visually about this, you don't have to. You can just follow along with what we're saying. But if you want that kind of visual representation, that's one, reaching new audiences with new products. But you can also grow your reach, revenue, and impact by taking current products, so offerings that are already in your portfolio, and targeting those to new audiences. So that might be the case if you're looking to go international and you already have offerings that would be of interest and appropriate for that.
So those are the first two quadrants. The third quadrant has to do with the fact that you can also drive growth by developing new products that you then offer to your current audiences. So maybe you have a basic offering for professionals in a topic, but you want to build out an intermediate offering for them to be able to continue on.
And then finally, you can look at your current audiences and your current products and figure out how to maximize the revenue coming from each audience and coming from each current product.
And not only maximize the revenue, but also the reach and the impact as part of that as well. We're going to talk more about this approach, this quadrant, in just a moment or two. But we will say here that when we consider these four options, if we consider these four quadrants in terms of risks, going out to new audiences with new products is the riskiest, because in that situation, you don't have a relationship with the audience or audiences that you're targeting, and you're investing time and money in new and therefore unproven products.
So true. And this one, I think, is often like a moth to a flame, I find, when I'm working with organizations. There's that idea that there's that whole new market out there and we have new products we could introduce, but that, as you said, that's the riskiest. Now, the next most risky is going to be targeting new audiences with your existing products. And, you know, you're dealing with products, you know, but you're trying to present them to new audiences that you don't have a relationship with.
And then what we would put just behind that in terms of risk is then targeting existing audiences with new products. So you're, again, investing in unknown products, but you do have a relationship with the audiences you're targeting. They've hopefully had positive experiences with your offerings in the past. Hopefully that will therefore predispose them and incline them to try something new that you have to offer.
And then finally, trying to grow with your existing products and your existing audiences is the least risky because you're working with audiences who you presumably know well and hopefully trust you, and also with products that are already built and are known quantities. And this tends to involve the least investment of time and money of the four options.
And so we kind of want to focus in on this approach in this episode and talk a little bit about what you can do with your existing products and existing audiences to try to grow your reach, revenue, and impact. Now, we will state here that there is an assumption built into this being the least risky approach, and that is that it assumes that you have the right products for the audiences that you're targeting. So hopefully you've done the market assessment, and hopefully you revisit that market assessment work periodically to really help ensure that you do have the right products for your existing audiences.
So let's assume that you do have the right products. Then getting more customers for the offerings you already have is one of the most straightforward ways to grow. And for this to happen, you have to increase your prospects and leads. That's, of course, easy enough to say, but you know, how do you go about doing that?
Right. So here we're talking about you have an audience that you're focused on, but you want to make sure that the greatest percentage possible of that audience is actually a customer, someone that comes to you for your learning products and services. So making sure that your current target audience or audiences are fully aware of your offerings that are relevant to them, that's a really important way to get more customers. And I would say that in our experience, organizations often assume that there's higher awareness among their audiences than there actually is. They might feel like they are beating the drum ad nauseum about a particular conference or course or whatever it might be. But often when you actually ask people in that audience, they might say, I've never heard of that before. I didn't know this organization offered that.
Yeah, I mean, we find that all the time when we go out and do market assessment work, surveying for organizations. We like to talk about awareness in relationship to conversion. So to better understand how to maximize participation in your offerings, you have to understand how aware your current audience is are of your offerings, and then also whether they've actually participated in them. And this will give you basically a conversion ratio. That is, you know, out of those who are aware, how many have converted into paying participants? So first you get the general awareness, and then you get, you know, is this product actually working with those who are aware?
And this is an area where we have some experience working with clients in consulting engagements around trying to gauge this awareness. And so, you know, Jeff, there's a survey question that we'll tend to use.
Yeah, we use this all the time, and you know, we're happy to freely share this for folks to try, even if you're not working with us. So we will ask basically a version of this. Prior to this survey, how aware were you of the following options from our learning business? And it might be specific online education options, or it may be some, you know, subcategory, whatever you're trying to find out more about. And then we say, please also indicate whether you have ever participated in one of these. And so we'll give categories of awareness and participation, starting with not aware, aware have participated, aware have not participated, and aware unsure about participation.
I think that last one probably hurts a lot of learning businesses that someone might have heard of it and they can't actually remember if they've participated or not. But again, unfortunately,
the truth can hurt.
Yeah, the truth can hurt. This can be the case. So it's still helpful to ask that question and to find out how many of the participants in your audience actually fall into that particular category. So what this is going to tell you is it's going to give you a sense of overall awareness. So if the awareness is relatively low, that is, if you have a lot of people, you know, saying not aware in response to that survey question, then that's going to steer you towards the idea that more promotion is probably needed. You need to get the word out. You need to make sure that you really are communicating with the audience and doing that through the right platforms and vehicles to really connect with them and make sure that they do become aware of what you have to offer.
Right. And then, of course, you're concerned with how strong is participation relative to the awareness that seems to be out there. And if participation is relatively low compared to the level of awareness, then you may, you know, actually need to adjust aspects of the offering. There may be things about the offering that just aren't capturing interest at the level that you need and aren't driving people towards conversion, actually enrolling in, registering for whatever that learning experience is.
Right. And this gets back to kind of the caveat we said at the beginning that while it can be least risky to try to get more reach, revenue, and impact out of your existing audiences and your existing products, you do have to make sure that you have the right products for that audience. And what a high level of awareness but a low level of participation might tell you is that actually that product isn't as spot on a fit as you thought it would be for your audience.
Right. And so once we've done this, as we mentioned, we'll create basically a conversion ratio with participation in the numerator and awareness in the denominator. And if you need to pause and go refresh yourself on what numerator is and what denominator is, you can do that. But numerator is in the top, denominator is what it's divided by. And there's no magic or scientific answer to what your conversion ratio should be. It's going to depend on the nature of the offering and your knowledge over time of how your products tend to perform. But as a general rule, if you have a conversion ratio of below 0.7 or so, you definitely have some room for improvement. And you may need to address elements of your offering or improve the quality as opposed to the quantity of your promotions. And we'll get into that more in just a minute.
Yeah, and I think that's a point, though, I will just pause right here to underscore, which is that, again, if you have high awareness but low participation, it could point to an underlying opportunity in the product itself to change how that works or what factors are involved in that product. But to what you just said there, Jeff, too, it might also just point to what you need to emphasize in the promotion itself.
Right.
Maybe you aren't speaking the love language of your learners in your promotions.
Well, I mean, often organizations do not really make the value clear because so many times you're dealing with an LMS, it's just sort of churning out these sort of standard product pages, sales pages. And, you know, and you may be listing things like learning objectives, for example, but those rarely convey the value, the real outcomes that you're going to produce from any learning experience. And so you're just not hooking the learner with the language you're putting out there. We'll say too that, you know, we're always going to ask as kind of a follow-on for those who say they're aware, but they haven't participated, what's your primary reason for not participating in whatever the offering is? And you can usually have some carry forward logic. And then you may want to ask about specific points that you're concerned about that you know may be an issue with the product, or you may want that to be open-ended. It just sort of depends on the nature of the research you're doing.
So basically, that wraps up our look at conversion. So if you're looking to get more reach, revenue, and impact out of your existing products with your existing audience, you want to think about conversion. And that's, we just gave you some ways to think about that and to perhaps do some market assessment to make sure you understand the conversion piece. At Tagoras, we partner with professional and trade associations, continuing education units, training firms, and other learning businesses to help them to understand market realities and potential, to connect better with existing customers and find new ones, and to make smart investment decisions around product development and portfolio management. Drawing on our expertise in lifelong learning, market assessment, and strategy formulation, we can help you achieve greater reach, revenue, and impact. Learn more at tagoras.com/more. Another route to go is to get more customers by using your current customers to help you. So essentially, this is asking for referrals.
Yeah, and this is just such a powerful thing to do that I think organizations don't do enough of. I mean, we don't do enough of this, you know, something that we're working on in our business, but getting one customer to tell another prospective customer that they should look at your stuff, that they should participate in these experiences, go to that conference, very, very powerful. But of course, you do have to ask for those referrals. I mean, some will happen organically, but if you really want this to take off, you know, it's something that you have to do.
And this reminds me, in the conversation you had with Kimmy Jonah of the University of Virginia, he was talking about the importance of curation filters, and that when he gets, you know, a recommendation from a colleague about an article to read or a book to read, then that bumps it to the top of his list because it's already, that resource has passed the threshold of someone that he trusts. And that's often even for unpaid stuff that he was talking about, an article on the web. Think about how much more valuable that would be for a paid experience. So I think if we pause to reflect on our own behavior, we really can recognize the importance of referrals.
Yeah. And I mean, and there's research out there to back up this type of thing. We just know that earned advertising, which is essentially what a referral really is more effective than, you know, owned or paid advertising. You know, the stuff that you pitch yourself or you pay to appear somewhere else, that's just not as effective. So, you know, it often means that you should rethink things if you're spending a lot of money on paid advertising and not really giving any thought to this earned advertising. It's worth thinking about, are there some ways that we can invest time, and time's probably going to be the biggest one, but possibly even some dollars in getting those referrals.
Right. And so to get referrals, again, we made the point just a moment ago, but you need to ask for them. Again, you might get a few spontaneously, but there's a lot to be said for going ahead and making it clear that you are looking for referrals, ask for them rather than just waiting and hoping. So you also want to think then about when to ask current customers for referrals. When are the logical points that you're going to be able to have interaction with those current learners that you can then ask them for a referral and then perhaps bake it into part of your process? So maybe as part of your after course evaluations or any sort of follow-up that you might be doing with those learners who have just seen what the experience is like and how great it is, and they might therefore be primed to share with others, can you go ahead and plant that seed and sort of say, who else would benefit from this course? Will you reach out to them and maybe give them a little bit of language to help them do that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that giving them language, equipping them basically to make it as easy as possible for them to make that referral, I think that's really important, because a lot of times somebody will ask me, you know, if I'm willing to be a referral, if I'm willing to refer business. And, you know, yes, I am, but it's not like, you know, I'm suddenly going to stop on a dime and do that. But if you give me an email I can forward, you know, I might do it right away, basically.
And we've experimented with referrals for events in the past. For example, when we had some conferences in the past, we wanted to make sure that those who had registered were helping to spread the word. And so we offered that they could bring a colleague or a friend for free. That was relatively easy for us to put in place. It was an online conference, so it had sort of relatively low cost for us to allow someone else to come for free. And then for that attendee, that was a way for them to deliver some value to a colleague that they know and like. So it was hopefully that win-win. And that's the kind of thing that you can think about. Are there times and places when it might make sense for you to either offer a deep reduction in price or potentially even offer something for free to help make sure that that referral flywheel is working for you.
Right. And of course, we do it for our consulting work too. It's often more important in kind of higher ticket type items, like something like if you're providing consulting or custom training or coaching or things like that, you definitely want a referral process built into that. By far the easiest way to get not only customers, but the types of customers that you want.
Right. And I think, as you said, the higher the price tag, the more valuable the referral just in general, because if someone's really contemplating that high ticket item, knowing that someone that they have a trusted relationship with says, yes, this is good value for you, that's going to help tip the balance and make them say, okay, I will spend that amount on this. And I would just say too, that you can think about referrals either as standard practice. I mean, that's something that we bake in around our consulting engagements, or you can also potentially run some experiments more like we did with our online conference and this idea of if for a period of time we ran sort of a bring a colleague for free promotion, you know, would that help us with referrals? So just be thinking about how to have your current learners help you get the word out about the value that you provide.
So that's referrals as one approach. And the next approach is, I mean, it really is kind of a referral in a way, because you're, again, getting people to speak on your behalf. But this is a little more scalable, I think, and something that you can incorporate into multiple places in what you do. And that's testimonials, getting customer testimonials.
Right. And so, you know, again, this is social proof. This is trust that we tend to believe what our peers say about a product or experience more than the organization that's providing that product or experience. Because, you know, it seems like, of course, that organization, the learning business that's providing experience, is going to have a bit of a biased view, right? They're going to say, this is great, come learn with us. But if that peer will say this was a great experience, you're much more likely to believe that. So essentially, we just need to make sure that you're making good use of testimonials. You want to put them in your promotions. You want to make them prominent in your course catalog. You want to feature them on your conference website, et cetera, et cetera. Just think about all the places where you're talking about the value of the learning experiences you offer. Are there testimonials there? Could there be more? Could they be more targeted?
Right. Testimonials are, as you suggested there, Salisa, like the proof of value. You have actual customers attesting to the value of the course or whatever the experience is. And ideally, you know, you would couple testimonials with, well, you know, what we might characterize as hard data, you know, which can be things like course completion, satisfaction ratings, days to job hire for certificates, things like that, just that quantitative type of data that people often look for. But all of this kind of combines to get at the fantastic value of what you offer.
That's right. So combining the anecdotal and qualitative testimonials with quantitative data whenever you can, that's kind of the goal right there, because you're getting both sides, you're getting sort of those numbers as well as the stories to help convey the value of what you're offering. And kind of related to how to present these things, a picture goes a long way when it accompanies a testimonial. It helps it feel like, oh, wow, this is an actual real person. When we talked about referrals a few moments ago, I mean, that's more of a one-on-one, someone saying, you know, I'm saying, hey, Jeff, you should check this out. I had a great experience at this conference. I think you would enjoy it. With a testimonial, it's more of me speaking generically, like, hey, this was a great conference. I learned a lot. I think others might benefit from it. But part of what helps it feel more like a personal recommendation is if my picture is there with what I'm saying.
Right. And I'll say this is a case where, you know, if a picture is worth 1,000 words, which it is, a video is probably worth a million words. We've certainly done some of that as well. And of course, it's so easy now to shoot videos or to get your prospective testimonials to shoot videos. And we'll mention too that you can incentivize referrals and testimonials. So offer something in exchange for them. Depending on what that is, you may want to make it clear that people have been offered some sort of incentive. So I think it's always better, you know, if you don't have to incentivize. And, you know, you can appeal to the kind of altruistic tendencies that people have. It's just a simple request. If it's timed right, it can yield testimonials just because, you know, your customers presumably like you. They want to help you. And a logical point for asking for a testimonial is just after they've completed the educational experience. And presumably, or hopefully at that point, they're going to be pretty jazzed up about it and look forward to saying good things about it.
So our recommendation here is to look at your promotions and check and see, are you making good use of testimonials? And then if you're not making good use, do you have testimonials and you just haven't put them to use? Or do you need to perhaps organize a social proof initiative where you're going to go out and gather some testimonials that you can begin to use? Or maybe you need to put a system in place that ensures that you're going to continue to collect testimonials at the logical point, for example, as part of a post-course evaluation.
And I will say I have never met an organization that couldn't do more and better with both referrals and testimonials. Even the ones that are doing it well, there's just always more that can be done there. And I'll say that's true of us as well, kind of physician, heal thyself. This is an area that we're always working on.
So we've been focused on this idea of audiences, really, and trying to look at conversion among your existing audiences, looking at referrals among your existing audiences, looking at testimonials from your existing audiences. Now we want to turn from audience to product, and we're going to look at the idea of how you can get greater reach, revenue, and impact out of your existing products by doing things like bundling, upselling, and having add-ons available.
And everybody's familiar with this, I think. It happens all the time, for example, with travel sites. If you go to, say, Expedia, and you're just looking for a flight, they're going to try to get you to book a hotel, too. I mean, it's right there at the top of your flight options. And of course, they're doing the same thing with cars, too. And so basically trying to get a much bigger transaction by getting folks to buy not just a flight, but a flight and a hotel, or better yet, a flight, hotel, and a car. And that's because they realize that, at least for some customers, that's actually going to represent some high value to be able, because they might need all of those things when they're going to be taking a trip. And so they want to be right there to say, you may need this and we're going to provide it.
And another tactic is suggestive selling. And this is where you look to get a customer to add something on or to upgrade. Again, we'll stay in the travel industry. You know, Southwest offers an add-on for early bird check-in. So when you purchase that flight, do you want to be able to board early on? That's going to cost you a little bit extra. We've got Amazon that pushes products through its suggestive selling, and it'll say, you know, these things are frequently bought together. And that, by the way, actually bakes in a little bit of social proof, because the phrase frequently bought together says, hey, others who are like you, who were here and interested in what you searched for, bought that plus this.
And I want to be just like those other frequently bought together people. I will say I do usually take the early bird check-in on Southwest, because I don't like having to stand in those, you know, line C or whatever at the very end that you can get stuck in. I'd say, you know, in the learning world, we've seen this kind of thing a lot with conferences would be a big area, you know. So you might, for example, see three registration options. Maybe one's for the live sessions only, one is for live, and then you also get the recorded sessions kind of bundled up with it. And maybe one comes with entry to a reception where the keynote speakers are going to be in attendance, or maybe a pre-conference workshop.
And so this is just a note to say that there are options to think beyond early bird discounts and on-site penalties for your conferences. What other value might you add and then charge more for? You know, that front row seat in the general sessions, you know, so you're on the front row for that keynoter, maybe a small group Q&A with a presenter. Those are things to be thinking about. And all of that could, of course, work for in-person or potentially online educations, maybe not the front row seat, but just this idea of sort of closer contact or more interaction, like the Q&A session that would work, whether in person or online.
Yeah, we'll wrap this up by saying that when you're using bundling or using suggestive selling, it may go without saying, but we're going to say it anyway, that the combinations and options, they need to be relevant and logical. They just need to make sense. So think about your different audience segments. There are probably certain segments that would be looking for more value and willing to pay, and certain things that would make sense for them. And if you do the work to figure out what they care about and what they value, then you're going to be able to make the right bundling offers or the right suggestive offers.
No, another way to get greater use out of your existing products is to look at the buying frequency. So this is the idea that your customers will purchase sooner than maybe they have typically. Now, this does mean that you are retaining customers, and retaining customers usually means that you have to stay in communication with them and you have to provide value. And that's, by the way, not always value that you charge for, but it might be things like the newsletter that you send out that shows the kinds of expertise your learning business has to share, you know, website, blog posts, things like that, that help keep you and your learning business on your customer's radar, and also helps the customer understand that next logical step. What else do you offer that they can and should make use of?
Right. And again, you know, a classic example, one that's going to be familiar to so many of our listeners, is the annual conference attendee. So this is a person who shows up once a year, but if you think of the value to your learning business and to the learner, if you can get them to participate in a few additional learning experiences throughout the year, that can often represent significantly more revenue for you. And it's moving the customer from a one-off experience to a more ongoing relationship-driven interaction with your organization and with learning, which they're going to benefit from.
And getting people to purchase more frequently requires putting forethought into the learning and buying path that you're providing for them. So make sure that there are clear and logical next steps presented to the learner. So when they finish a course, what's the next one that would make sense for them to take? So learning and certification paths, career-focused curriculum, competency models, all of these can be very useful in making that next logical step very clear to your learners.
So to wrap all this up, tie a bow around it, you know, we'll note that marketing at its essence is about the audiences you serve and the products that you offer to those audiences.
And so in the end, the core of a learning business's marketing strategy really boils down to audiences and products, the existing ones and the ones that you might add.
So we hope the view that we offered of those four essential options: new products to new audiences, existing products to new audiences, new products to existing audiences, and existing products to existing audiences might give you some clarity as you think through your marketing strategy. Sometimes it's helpful to take hairy subjects like marketing and strategy and break them down into simple but not simplistic terms, like today's look at audiences and products existing and new.
At leadinglearning.com/episode424, you'll find show notes, a transcript, and options for subscribing to the podcast. If you haven't yet, please do subscribe.
And we'd be grateful if you would take a minute to rate us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen, especially if you enjoy the show. Salise and I personally appreciate those reviews and ratings, and they help the podcast show up when others search for content on leading a learning business.
And please spread the word about Leading Learning. You can do that in a one-on-one exchange, and you can do it through social media. In the show notes at leadinglearning.com/episode424, you'll find links to connect with us on LinkedIn, X, and Facebook.
Thanks again, and see you next time on the Leading Learning Podcast.